So thank you, everyone, for joining us on this Sunday morning in May. It's funny, you know, when you look around, you really can't tell the difference between May and June. You know, it's these labels that we ascribe to time. Very interesting. So this morning I had planned to share a little section from the Way of the Bodhisattva, and we still might do that this morning if we have time. But first, obviously, the last few days, few nights, once again, I mean, how many times do we have to say once again? You know, it's like a virus, right? We all know about viruses. We are now experts in virus. It's the main topic of our conversation for many of us. The interesting thing about viruses, they can't be seen, can they? And yet, they are there. They can't be seen, and yet they spread. They have their own inner life, the life of a virus, but they also respond to causes and conditions. They appear and disappear, and yet we know the virus, even if we are not manifesting any symptoms. Most people don't manifest symptoms, and yet they have the virus. And some people manifest symptoms, mild symptoms, not very significant, moderate symptoms, more significant, and then many people have significant, extreme responses to the virus. And there are personal eruptions, and then multiple of personal eruptions. There are places in our world right now where it's quite present in various cities or towns or places, quite virulent. When we don't see it, when we're not aware of it, it is still there, we're just not aware of it. We're learning that we have to be careful because it cannot be seen often. We don't know who has it, do we? But when it erupts, then we see it. When it erupts in individuals, when it erupts in peoples, we see it. So we know about viruses and epidemics and contagions. But there is another pandemic. It's an ancient pandemic in our world. And many people are infected with it to one degree or another. And just like the virus, it doesn't discriminate. Wherever it finds a willing host, it will grow. So there are things I could say, but what really came to mind just before I came out here earlier was Thich Nhat Hanh's poetry. For some reason, lines of his came up. I am sure already, and for a while now, afterwards, there will be many pronouncements about injustice, about anger and hatred and violence. You know, all kinds of wonderful words will be said. So I don't need to say them. I let others say the words. This morning I just feel like resorting to poetry. So I want to share some poems from Thich Nhat Hanh, because especially in this collection, Call Me By My True Names. Which was first published in 93. But many of his poems, and the poems I'll read today, he wrote in Vietnam in the 60s. When they had a pandemic in Southeast Asia. Of anger, and hatred, and violence, and greed, and self-interest. Again, manifested in the world. In America, we joined right in, didn't we? So this is a poem called Condemnation. So please remember, this was like written in 1964. Listen to this. Yesterday, 6 Viet Cong came through my village, and because of this, the village was bombed. Every soul was killed. When I returned to the village the next day, there was nothing but clouds of dust, the pagoda without roof or altar, only the foundations of houses, the bamboo thickets burned away. In the presence of the undisturbed stars, in the invisible presence of all people still alive on earth, let me raise my voice to denounce this dreadful war, this murder of brothers by brothers. Whoever is listening, be my witness. I cannot accept this war. I never could, I never will. I must say this 1,000 times before I am killed. I am like the bird who dies for the sake of its mate, dripping blood from its broken beak and crying out, "Beware! Turn around and face your real enemies. Ambition, violence, hatred, greed. Humans are not our enemies, even those called Viet Cong. If we kill our brothers and sisters, what will we have left? With whom, then, shall we live?" So this was called Condemnation. And in his little note to this, Thay says it was published in a Buddhist weekly that had a circulation of about 50,000. He said, based on this poem, he was then labeled an anti-war poet and was denounced as a pro-communist propagandist. So, you know, our current times are really no different, are they? I mean, this is a human poem. This is a human being poem. This is a poem that does not discriminate between pro this and anti that or anything. And yet, as soon as it manifests in the world of discrimination, people call it this or that, very much like now, very distorted. So that's called condemnation, condemnation. Here's a poem called those that have not exploded. And the note here says that Ty wrote this in 1966 after an attack on the School of Youth for Social Service by a group of unknown men with grenades and guns. So Ty was the founder of this School of Youth for Social Service in Vietnam, which was really not political at all. It was really mostly high school, college students, young people, really going into the countryside and working on community projects, helping to rebuild. You know, nobody else was taking care of the refugees. I mean, it was really just, you know, young people serving their country in a time of war. And again, you know, their aspirations, their heart was pure. They weren't on one side or the other, and yet they manifested in this time of such antagonism and hatred between various factions that they were caught up in it. And this was an actual physical attack, and they were defenseless. And so Ty wrote this poem. And please remember, these were his students. So this is not just a distant poet. This is very personal to him. The poem is called "Those That Have Not Exploded." I don't know. I just do not know why they hurl grenades at these young people. Why wish to kill those boys with still innocent brows, those girls with ink-stained hands? What was their crime? To hear the voice of compassion? To come and live in a hamlet, it's a village, to help the villagers, teach the children, work in the rice paddies? Last night, when those grenades burst, 12 young people fell with mangled bodies and burst skin. One girl's flesh took more than 600 metal bits of shrapnel. This morning, two are buried. Each waits for the sun to rise again in our motherland. Each longs for peace, to be reborn as a butterfly. We accept death and sorrow. But listen, brothers and sisters, those grenades have burst and ripped apart the sky. Those boys and girls are gone, leaving a trail of blood. But there are more grenades than those that burst last night. There are more grenades caught in the heart of life. Do you hear me? There are more that are yet to burst. They remain still in the heart of man. Unknown the time of their detonation. Unknown when they will desecrate our land. Unknown the time they will annihilate people. And still, we beg you to believe there is no hatred in our hearts, no rancor in our souls. What the world needs, what we all need, is love. Come, hear me. For time grows short, and danger is everywhere. Let us take those grenades out of our hearts, our motherland, humankind. Let us stand. Let us stand side by side. For those of you who, you know, listen to the news and the talking heads and politicians and, you know, who's going to be saying this? Hopefully there will be some. Hopefully if there's any of us who have the opportunity, to speak with others, this is what we will say to them. As bodhisattvas and as Buddhists, we take the vow not to kill. And the converse, we say, and to protect all life. This is our vow. For many of us, not to kill, because of our kind of how we are, is not that difficult. The challenge is, but how do I protect life? Please ask yourself that question. Thay says in his poem, the world needs love. So he calls upon us to take those grenades of hatred, anger, and all those grenades that do harm. He says, first, take them out of our hearts. Then our country, our motherland, humankind. Of course, when each of us take those grenades out of our hearts, since we are part of our community, we are part of our country, we are part of humankind, we are beginning that process of changing the world, changing the heart of the world. So please take a moment, just please reflect. And please understand, when we hear these things, when we see the news, when we see the injustice, the unfairness, when we see the anger, you know, when we see this, I saw this image this morning of these, you know, on one side there this wall of police in there. Protective uniforms. And behind that is a human being. Maybe scared. Maybe angry. Who knows? But yet, on the other side, the protesters, angry, upset, hurt. Just venting. They don't know what else to do. They don't know about this teaching. On both sides, they don't know about this teaching. I looked at those picture and I thought to myself, everybody, I mean, this was such a, confrontation. Two different forces. And I thought of this poem. I thought, every one of those people manifesting in this very different way, all of them were born of a mother. All of them came into the world as infants. All of them were held, I mean, you know, the whole thing. All of them were children. And we have to ask ourselves, and in that way, they're all the same. You know, whatever their sex, whatever their sexuality, whatever their race, whatever their, you know, whatever. All the ways we discriminate ourselves from one another. All of them were infants. All of them, you know, just open to the world. And how did they get to where they are right now? You see, how does this happen? How does that purity, that innocence, that openness become this? You know? And why are some people on this side of the line, and why are some people on the other side of the line? You know, why is that? So please take a moment. What are the grenades in our hearts right now? That can explode and destroy our capacity to love, to understand, to generate compassion. And this is not passive. In his last poem, Thay said, remember, I'm like the bird who just cries out. Stop. Go back. What did he say in that poem, if I could find it? You know, turn away from hatred. Turn away from violence. You're killing your brother. You're killing your sister. So it's not passive. So please check yourself. Check your heart mind. Have you pulled out all the grenades in your heart? So that love can really blossom. Compassion can really blossom. Can you look at those two forces, the police, the protesters, and love them all, and understand them all, and be compassionate for the suffering of all, even though, you know, they're playing out this little drama, this painful drama, in this moment of time. As I said, every one of those people are on the same exact journey from birth till death. Every one of those people are going to die. We're all the same. When we see that we're all the same, then we feel connected. We feel the sameness of each other. We understand that that person over there who I'm confronting is my brother or my sister. How can I hate my brother and sister? How can I do violence to my brother and sister? You know, it's, as Thay says in another of his famous poem, you know, he says, you know, it's only when we put the label enemy on our brother and sister, that's how we can hurt them. That's how we can do violence to them. We have to put that label. And when you see the confrontation between the two sides, you realize they don't see each other as human beings. They see each other as labels, as enemies. And when you see someone as an enemy, you have diminished their humanity. You have made them into a threat. And then it's not that hard to arouse those kind of afflictive emotions toward them and to be very protective and often violent. Please ask yourself, Close your eyes. And ask yourself, am I really committed to pulling out all those afflictive grenades within me? You may say, I don't have hatred, but I do have anger, irritation. Well, that's just a degree. I mean, do I have intolerance? We might have intolerance for the people who are intolerant. Fear. Greed. Do I have self-interest in me? Push comes to shove. My own needs, my own security, my own self comes first. Is that the case? And still we beg you to believe there is no hatred in our hearts, no rancor in our souls. What the world needs, what we all need, is love. Come hear me, for time grows short and danger is everywhere. Let us take those grenades out of our hearts, our motherland, humankind. Let us stand. Let us stand side by side. So that poem is called Those That Have Not Exploded. And the next poem is called Recommendation. And in his note, he said he wrote this in 1965, for the young people of the School of Youth for Social Service, who risked their lives every day during the war, recommending them to prepare to die without hatred. Some had already been killed violently, and I cautioned the others against hating. Our enemy is our anger, hatred, greed, fanaticism, and discrimination against men and women. Even if you die because of violence, we must meditate on compassion in order to forgive those who kill us even. He writes, when you die, realizing this state of compassion, you are truly a child of the awakened one, the Buddha. Even if you are dying in oppression, shame, and violence, if you can smile with forgiveness, you have great power. And some of you have heard of Nachi Mai, one of Thay's close disciples and one of the first six young people ordained in the Order of Interbeing in Vietnam. She immolated herself. It's quite a well-known story, quite something. She read this poem of his into a tape recorder that she left for her parents. So this poem is called Recommendation. Promise me this day, promise me now, while the sun is overhead, exactly at the zenith, promise me. Even as they strike you down with a mountain of hatred and violence, even as they step on you and crush you like a worm, even as they dismember you and disembowel you, remember, brother, remember, man is not our enemy. The only thing worthy of you is compassion, invincible, limitless, unconditional. Hatred will never let you face the beast in man. One day, when you face this beast alone, with your courage intact, your eyes kind, untroubled, even as no one sees him, out of your smile will bloom a flower. And those who love you will behold you across 10,000 worlds of birth and dying. Alone again, I will go on with bent head, knowing that love has become eternal on the long, rough road. The sun and the moon will continue to shine. How beautiful. For many people in our country, life has always been a long, rough road. But it seems as if more lately, more and more people in our country are realizing this life is a long, rough road. It wasn't too long ago when many people's major concern was the growing inequality in our society and the struggle and destruction of the middle class and all the things you're all familiar with. Part of the long, rough road. And then the long, rough road that we're experiencing in the climate, right? Produced by industrialization and fossil fuels and everything else. This quick, very rapid transformation of the environment, not in a good way. And understanding extremity of climate has begun and will continue to wreak, great pain and suffering and instability on humankind. And then the pandemics. How quickly we've changed our lifestyle. How quickly we've learned to look differently at one another. We can't even embrace each other anymore, can we? We have to stay distant from one another. And then, these last couple of nights, once again reminding us of this poison that is, this is deeply embedded in the fabric of the American consciousness. We think that policies and law changes and all these things, well, certainly they have been a movement in the right direction. We see, these viruses still remain. So again, we go on the long, rough road, knowing that love has become eternal and the sun and the moon will continue to shine. It's interesting, poetry is what we take refuge in. Let me just get some tea. So I think it's very powerful. Many people know Thay as he's kind of manifest in these last couple of decades as this somewhat removed, great teacher, patriarch, writer, all these wonderful teachings, mindfulness, bringing it to everyday life, and we forget. We forget who he really is and where he comes from. And this is very important. Because, it's like, traditionally in China, maybe Vietnam, but a lot of, at least in China, if you ever would see monks and nuns, you would see these 6 or 8 kind of marks on their head, and because they shave their heads or they had the short hair, you'd see them. And what that is they burn moxa, which is a kind of traditional treatment, part of Chinese medicine, but they would do it like incense. And they would burn it on their head, in other words, burning, when they took ordination to become monks and nuns. And why did they do that? quite extreme. And the answer was, the life of a monk and nun is not an easy life. Right? Not an easy life. It can be a rough road. And it's easy to commit yourself to a rough road when you're not on the rough road, when you're comfortable. But with burning incense in your scalp, to take the vow is much more meaningful. That was the answer. If I can't endure this little temporary pain, how can I endure the life that I've committed myself to follow? And I say that in relationship to understanding Thich Nhat Hanh's teachings and his teachings on love and all these wonderful teachings he has given us. We have to understand that this is the matrix in which he developed that. That was his response to basically, what we're beginning to get a handle on here in our own country. He was in a time when the social fabric had ripped open, when families were open by differences in ideology and self-interest, when great harm was being done to individuals, to the environment, great instability. Things were out of control, right? And so he wrote these poems. We have to understand, he didn't write, that's what I mean. He's writing these poems in the midst of this. This was happening to him. This was happening to his closest students. I mean, he has poems in here for his closest disciples who were killed. I mean, right? Please understand, there is power to his word. And it is very, and we have to heed him. Why do you think he wrote these strong poems? Because the way of anger and hatred is so easy to slip into, so natural, right? To slip into anger or hatred or fear or despair or all those afflictive emotions, those are so easy. But he's calling us to the Dharma. He's calling us to another way to respond to these terrible situations, this rough road that humanity has created for itself. And to show us another way. So again, sometimes it's good to have these elaborated teachings, but sometimes it's good to have just poetry, very simple. So I have one more to read, but I'll hold off. So there are questions.
So there are two questions, and both really have to do with, is it congruent with Thay's teachings to take compassionate action so our cries are heard? And one of the questions specifically said, what advice can you give us about attending the protests?
I mean, I'm not clear what I haven't said today. You know. The first response has to be the inward response. Because what is manifested in the world, we can't be fooled. These are, we see human bodies, don't we? Doing this and that on all the different sides. We hear mouths moving and speaking words. But behind it, on any side, is the mind of people. We have to understand that. That is why Thay begs us to pull out the grenades in our hearts. He begs us. And then to get on with the work of transforming the world. You know, and I think it is up to each of us to be clear how we want to do that. I mean, if you feel that it would be helpful to the world, if it would be helpful to your ideal of reconciliation and love, to publicly do something, then do it. Right? But please, you know, am I doing it just so I don't feel impotent? And do I feel impotent because I really don't believe that, I don't believe these teachings, that pulling out the grenades in my heart and learning how to really be someone who can completely not choose either side. Thich Nhat Hanh has another poem where he says, choose love. That's our choice. Choose love. Choose understanding. Choose compassion. You know, and that's long term. You know? I mean, you know, we have, you know, we've seen it. I mean, we had a great apostle of Martin Luther King here. We had a great apostle of this. Right? Who was a, you know, was a very, you know, a leader of social activism. But he was a man of deep religion, right? He was a man of deep faith. He was a man who said his goal is to establish the beloved community. Gandhi was like that. I mean, you know, so I think if we want to move forward into the world and move forward into the world of activism, please make sure of your heart and your mind and its purity, and really also ask yourself, is this contributing to the world I want, or is this, you know, oftentimes one takes a da, and then somebody does it in the opposite, takes a da, you know, stand, and then this one takes a stand, and, you know, what am I doing? We have to ask ourselves, what am I doing? What would be the most meaningful response, you know, to racial injustice? To go out there and take a stand and put out a sign saying I'm against racial injustice? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. You know, I the world I live in is the world I don't know anything. I just do my best. But I do my best based on what I believe are the values that I live by. Right? So I would certainly encourage all of us to make sure that I'm just not acting out of impotence or anger or fear or just wanting to do something. Because that's what everybody else is doing. You know, I assure you, and I'm now, forgive me, I sound like a talking head. I assure you, having, you know, at least been living 75 years and lived through the 60s and the 70s and all kinds of riots and all, you know, it's, you know, they'll be cleaning up afterwards. You know, and you know, racial injustice and all these issues and police, you know, will be getting attention for a while, but we'll see what happens. You know, Buddhism, nonviolence, we have to be in it for the long haul. We have to be in it for the long haul. We want to transform the world. We want to create a world that Thay is asking us to create, a world based on love and understanding and compassion. You know, and that is not the way of anger. That is not the way of hatred. That is not the way of, you know, I mean, anyhow. But, you know, I'm not here to tell anybody what to do. You know, I don't have to do that because there are plenty of other people telling you what to do. We are great experts in everybody else's, whatever else you should be doing. But, you know, this is a path of self-responsibility. You know, is my mind free of discrimination? Do I see all human beings as my brother and sister and greet them all with love and understanding? Please ask yourself that.
And one other question in that regard, what is the root cause of anger, discrimination, and racism? Where does it come from?
You know, this is our dharma, right? It comes because we do not see clearly. We are deluded. We do not see, you know, these teachings that we ponder, that we meditate on, that we study, these teachings of non-self, these teachings of emptiness, the empty nature of everything, the empty nature of self. These are not just philosophical concerns of some kind of disembodied elite. This is what ties a Zen master. These, you know, it's this fundamental mistaken perception about reality, that we perceive ourselves as a solid self, that we perceive the world as something outside us, that we see the world of pleasure and non-pleasure, and that we find meaning by grasping after pleasure from me and rejecting non-pleasure. And that endless unfolding, whether it's in the world of careers or things or pleasures or relationships, that attachment aversion is creating all the emotional afflictions. You know, and it just snowballs. You know, how can somebody enslave somebody else? You know, how can you look at another human being and say, I'm going to make them my slave and I'm going to treat them like an animal? Or actually, from what I understand about slavery, they treated their slaves worse than they would treat their animals. They probably cared for their animals better. I mean, how do you get to that place as a human being where you can do that? Well, there's only one way. You have to live in a world of separation. They're not the same as me. See, as soon as we make that fundamental step deep in our consciousness to separate ourselves from that which appears in our mind and see it as different, we are entering that road that eventually just gets, we discriminate more and more and more, more and more emotional affliction, more and more attachment aversion. It gets stronger, it gets reified, and then it just blossoms into the world of action. You know, and that's where that comes from. That this didn't come out of nowhere. Right? You know, it's like the virus. Right? It didn't come out of nowhere. People don't get sick out of nowhere. They have to have the virus in them. And then the causes and conditions are ripened, and then it just, you know, the virus has found a host that it can thrive on, right? We all have the seeds of anger. We all have the seeds of fear. We all have the seeds of hatred. We all have the seeds of despair. We all have these seeds, you know? And if we're not careful, and if we nurture the afflictive emotions, they will grow. You know, there are many, many people in our culture where they have grown up learning to hate, learning to discriminate, You know, it's not about skin color. It's not about gender. It's not about any of this stuff. It's about delusion and separation. And what we see acting out in the world is fundamentally that, and it's not going to change. It's going to go up and down. If you look at the history of humanity, it goes up and down, right? Goes right, goes left. Goes forward, goes back. Why is that? Right? I mean, here we are in the year 20, whatever we are, 2020, right? We're Buddhists. We're still trying to live up to teachings that are 2,600 years old. Christians are trying to live teachings that are 2,000 years old. Jews are trying to live up to teachings that they think is 5,000 years. I mean, it's like bizarre. Right? You think about it. Thousands of years of human history, and we still don't get it. When all these teachings, right, are there, right before our eyes, all the teachers have appeared and taught us the way. And yet we're still mucking around in the filth, like pigs, right? Pigs, you know, they love to run around in the muck looking for a little bit of something. Forgive me, I'm not maybe a little strong today, but that's really what's going on here, you know. I mean, there was in Hinduism, there's something, I think Ramakrishna said something like, that a lot of practitioners, he said they're like vultures. He said, they're up in the sky, you see them up in the sky, they fly so beautifully, right? But all they're looking for is something dead to eat. That's all that's in their mind. You know, we have to look, you know, what's in our minds? I don't care how we look, how we act, what political views we think we have, you know, we're all very proud of our political views. It doesn't matter what they are, right? You can be right, you can be left, you can be, you know, conservative. I mean, everybody's quite proud of their views, right? Thinks they're correct. Yes, was there any more questions? The last one I want to read is called A Prayer for Peace. And Tai writes, this prayer was used throughout South Vietnam in 1965 in the Don't Shoot Your Own Brother campaign. That's what it was called. To rouse the willingness to work for peace. During meetings of young people, we chanted this poem, uniting our hearts and our efforts to continue to work for peace. Most of us were Buddhists. This chant aims at reconciliation and stopping the war. It was a very powerful way of working for communication. This is something we can share with Western friends. It's called A Prayer for Peace. Please listen. In beauty, sitting on a lotus flower, is Lord Buddha, quiet and solid. Your humble disciple, calm and pure of heart, forms a lotus flower with his hands, faces you with deep respect, and offers this heart-held prayer. Why don't we all put our hands together in the lotus, holding a lotus? If you're a Buddhist, you can imagine if you're not there that you're, you know, before the Buddha. Or if you're not a Buddhist and there's something else that you hold sacred, just imagine that you're sitting before that. We offer this heartfelt prayer. Homage to all Buddhas in the 10 directions. Please have compassion for our suffering. Our land has been at war for decades, divided It is a land of tears, with blood and bones of young and old. Mothers weep till their tears are dry, while sons on distant fields decay. Its beauty torn apart, only blood and tears now flow. Brothers killing brothers for promises from others. Homage to all Buddhas in the 10 directions. Because of your love for all people, have compassion upon us. Help us remember we are just one family, north and south, black or white, whatever we want to say. Help us rekindle our compassion and brotherhood and sisterhood and transform our separate interests into loving acceptance of all. May your compassion help us forget our hatred. May Avalokiteshvara's Bodhisattva's love help the flowers bloom again in the soil of our country. Humbly, we open our hearts to you so you may help us transform our karma and water the flowers of our spirits. With your deep understanding, help our hearts grow light. Homage to Shakyamuni Buddha, whose great vows and compassion inspire us. I am determined to cultivate only thoughts that increase trust and love. To use my hands to perform only deeds that build community, to speak only words of harmony and aid. And I'll just change from Vietnam to America. I'll say, may the merit of this prayer be transformed into peace in the United States. May each of us realize this, our deep aspiration.